History through the eyes of those who lived it. This is Hometown Heroes, presented on the air and online by Provident Payments, proudly honoring the men and women whose service and sacrifice have secured our freedom. Now, the host of Hometown Heroes, Paul Leffler.
Welcome to another edition of Hometown Heroes, the program that reminds you no matter where you live in this great country of ours, no matter how big or how small your hometown might be, there are stories there that should not go untold. And they don't have to go untold as long as we're willing to ask a few questions and then listen patiently as memories start to emerge from the shadows. Our goal has always been, first and foremost, to honor our veterans for their service and sacrifice, but also to preserve their stories so the rest of us never forget the price that's been paid for our freedom. And along that journey, not only do we end up educated, not only are we entertained, but so often we find ourselves inspired by these stories from men and women who have served our country. The story we're going to hear today is certainly unique, but before we dive in, just a little addendum to our last episode, which focused on the 80th anniversary of the sinking of the USS Hornet. This past Wednesday, October 26th, was that anniversary, and 100-year-old Bob Cole, whose story you heard last time, spent the afternoon at the Veterans Memorial Museum, home of the Legion of Valor in Fresno, California, where a large-scale model of his ship anchors a display on the Doolittle Raid, complete with a uniform and flight goggles worn aboard the Hornet by Jimmy Doolittle himself. Bob shared his story there with every major TV, radio, and print outlet from the area, and as a result, he is now reconnected with quite a few old friends. He's also fielding requests from around the country as that news started to spread, and it may be that he is the last living survivor of the Hornet sinking 80 years ago. The Hornet Association has no current records of any others. If you missed that program last time, you can find the podcast at hometownheroesradio.com. You'll also find links to some of the news coverage Bob generated on that 80th anniversary. And who knows, there may be some further developments in the days ahead. But I just want to say thank you to everyone who made that 80th anniversary so meaningful for Bob. The story we have the privilege of listening to today is quite a bit different. We're going to meet an Army veteran who recently returned from an honor flight to Washington, D.C., and we're going to be reminded again that those who appreciate the freedom we have as Americans the most are those who have had to live in its absence. That's the case for the dozens of prisoners of war we've met on Hometown Heroes over the years, but this is not an ex-POW. It's someone whose family dealt with religious persecution and had to live as exiles. 92-year-old Jacob Volkov earned his citizenship by serving as an Army medic during the Korean War. He later became a longtime educator in the Stockton, California area. He's written about the unique journey his life represents in the book Trekking Through Trials, which I have linked for you at hometownheroesradio.com. The story of his family's life as exiles goes back to before the Russian Revolution.
Before the communists came to Russia, owning or reading a Bible was considered a crime in Russia. There were some people who secretly kept Bibles. Towards the end of the 19th century, in 1800s, there was a little permission to own Bibles. But even that one had to buy on a black market and read it silently. And it's a strange thing, Paul, when you say something is forbidden more than anything else. People want to find out why. And my people thought, heard all their lives, why was Bible forbidden to be read? So they got the Bibles and started reading, and they discovered that the state religion in Russia, the Bible, contradicted some of the beliefs of the state religion, that it was man-made, man-blessed. And so our people decided we're going to celebrate or accept only those holidays that are in the Bible and blessed by God. So we broke away from the state religion and we were punished for it. To begin with, my grandparents and many other people in that group were sent. Russia was a big, big country and very much unstable. People crossing the border back and forth without permission. So sometimes it was illegal, and some people who were not accepted in Russia crossed the border. So because we violated state and religion were one. So whatever the state dictated, the religion accepted, and vice versa. We will call it the Sabbath keepers because they read and they came to a conclusion that Sunday is a man's made religion. We said we're not going to acknowledge it. So they came to the conclusion that the seventh day, Saturday or Sabbath, was the one. So we accepted that, and we were laughed at, called as Jews. And sometimes among those people, calling someone a Jew was derogatory. And someone called the Sabbatarians, just called Subotniki. Saturday in Russia is Subota, Sabbath. And that's what they called us. And when we came to Iran, at first to Persia, and there were some people there, not Russians, but who lived in Russia and became Seventh-day Adventists. Mm-hmm. So they heard of some, this Russian village called Rahmat Abad. They heard of us. And they sent a missionary, a Seventh-day Adventist, and they got all these Sabbath-keeping people and preached to us their holidays, and our holidays somewhat were alike. So we were close to each other, and by their preaching and explaining, most of us accepted Seventh-day Adventist. That's what I am right now.
So you are the 10th of 10 children, but tell me where you were born and why you didn't get to stay there very long.
First, we were sent to Turkish border. And during the Russian war with Japan and also World War I and war with Japan, we were called Christians, but not very popular. By the way, most of the people that were in Rahmat Abad, this Rahmat Abad, were Moluccans. We were the minorities. What I started to tell you is that when people are suffering hardship, they unite against their problem. They forget the differences in religion or beliefs. And when they become free and started making good life, there was enmity. And there was that friendship that was during a hard time disappears, and people become enemies. In peacetime, when they should rejoice, but they were very united under hardships.
So I guess as far as your family goes, since you are the 10th out of 10, your parents had lived in Russia before the Tsar was deposed and communism came in, right? So they experienced all that in the advent of communism, and had they had to move a couple times before you were born?
It started after the persecution of the people who owned the Bible was lessened. And that's when people started studying the Bible. Why was it punished? That's when they rejected the state religion. And that's what my grandparents did. And because the membership that began breaking away from the state religion, well, the church complained, what are we going to do with these people? So they said, well, the best thing to do is to exile them away from large cities. So the best way was to send them to weak borders, and there was that kind of a border with Turkey. So they sent us there the first time for us.
And this is before you were born?
Before I was born, yes. Well, you see, we were not criminals. We were not thieves or involved in crime of any kind, but just believed differently. So they didn't send us to Siberia, but to a place away from civilization.
And this is all because your family disagreed with the Russian Orthodox Church?
Correct. And so when the Russian people went to the Far East during the war with Japan, that place where we escaped was a good land, and it was owned as a capital by various countries and various rich people. There were Persians, now Iranians. There were Armenians. There were other countries who took that place. We called it Rahmat Abad. Okay, so it means peaceful ville in Russian.
But you were born in what would now be Turkmenistan. And that was, so you were born there, but before you turned one, your family had to move again because you were chased out at that point.
Yes, you know, because Turkish people invaded the Rahmat Abad because they had owned it once before. The Turks were very good to us. They came to us and gave us three choices. We could remain in Turkey, accept Turkish citizenship and live there freely. Or we could return back to Russia from where we were exiled. And if we didn't like either place, we could go to anywhere in the world. The relatives of my mother's side at the beginning of the 20th century moved to America. Because my uncles were in the military service, my father said, we're not going to go to America because our sons are in the military and their families, their wives and children, are living with us. We don't want to leave them just for nobody, and we cannot separate husbands from wives and move them to America with us. We're going to go back where from whence we were exiled.
So your uncles were in the Russian military?
Yes.
So if you all moved to America, then you're separating those families because the husbands are still in Russia serving for the Russian army and the wives are in America?
Correct. There were a lot of us. When we returned back to the place, it was a central Russia, and people who were born there were called the Great Russians. It was a big known spot where Russia was Russia. So the church said, we don't want you. You go back where you came from. We said, this was our home. We were sent from them. We are returning home. And they said, I'm sorry. So they went to the state and they explained to them why we were exiled. So they agreed with the church. So they sent us to Turkmenistan that borders with, at that time, with Persia. And again, each time we were exiled, these religious people decided to pray all together, pray to one God, and they fasted and asked God, said, Lord, we have problems, help us. And their exile, because the state and the church did not bother us because we were somewhere way out where we were not reached. Communists started with main cities. And eventually communists started growing geographically, taking places where these Russian people lived and they did not have the state religion or state politics. So they came there, and hardworking people, we were all farmers. We started living very well. And to send us to a different place rather than the place where we wanted to go originally, they sent us to Turkmenistan. Our men who were in the military service discharged them from military and sent them home, a blessing to us. The land was very good for those who worked in lumber. And there was a good land where we had farming to do. And we started living very well. And some became kind of wealthy. And the communists came. Religious? No. Rich people? No. And they said, accept communism or we will take your Russian citizenship. And they told us, now you know how we treat non-citizens. You might be sent to a worse place than you sent earlier, which meant to us Siberia. Elders got together of all religions and they decided what to do. Someone suggested escape to Persia and they agreed. They sent some people who spoke some Persian. How they got that knowledge, I don't know. And they went to meet the border guards and with bribe they let us come in. So we again came and started living freely.
And so you were not quite 1 year old when your family crossed the border into Persia, present-day Iran. It sounds like you have some perspective on the significance of that decision that your family made. Because you weren't making the decision, you were a baby. What was the significance of that decision? How different do you think your life might have been had they made a different decision?
They were escaping the plight of losing Russian citizenship and being treated as a foreigner and could have been sent to Siberia.
And spell it out for us. What would that have meant if your family was sent to Siberia? Would that have changed your outcome or your life expectancy?
We were thinking that, but primarily we would have been taken our religion and forced communism. Those two things were the ones that stood in our way.
You know, I've interviewed over 1,000 World War II veterans, and usually I'm talking to them about December 7th, 1941, and how they remember the day America got in the war. You know, maybe they served in the Pacific or in Europe or in China, Burma, India. But I'm just curious about your experience because you were coming of age during World War II. You know, you were 9 when it started in Europe and you were 15 or so, I guess, when it all ended. What was your view or experience of World War II in Persia?
Actually, to tell you the truth, we lived in a different country. We lived in a Russian village. We had no contact with the foreign news. Only a few people who went to the city and they found that Russia was in war with Germany. And they would come to our village and announce that. And I remember my family cried that Russia, that Germany invaded Russia. No, they ran away from Russia because they were going to be punished for their religion. And now, living free, absolutely free, and knowing that their Russia, the Russian people, were being invaded by the Germans, they cried. And we didn't know anything about it. I didn't know, except for what people heard, and they just said, okay, Germany invaded this city, that city, almost coming to Moscow.
So while so many people's lives were affected by World War II, on a daily basis, it sounds like yours really wasn't. You were isolated enough that it didn't have a big effect on you?
Absolutely. That's right. We just only heard from people who got the news from somebody else. Mm-hmm. And how much of the truth there was, I was skeptical about it. I didn't believe them.
Well, all the twists and turns that this 92-year-old Army veteran's story has taken can be a little hard to believe, too. Jacob Volkov is our guest today. We have his book, Trekking Through Trials, linked for you at hometownheroesradio.com, as well as the Hometown Heroes page on Facebook. And when we come back, how this Russian exile ended up in America and a few other developments you probably wouldn't anticipate. Hometown Heroes will be right back after this. When life throws you curveballs, you have to be adaptable, or at least have a good pinch hitter on the bench who knows how to handle a curve. When it comes to your business, Provident Payments is the best teammate you could ever have. Perhaps it helps that many of the leaders for one of the fastest-growing payment consultants in America are former ballplayers. Contactless payments, online ordering, point of sale, you name it, Provident Payments knows it. Now, you could get some of these services from one of the big banking companies, but you're never going to get the kind of personalized service that Provident Payments delivers every day. 24/7 solution-based tech support. When your ability to process payments goes haywire in any way, time is money. So would you rather wait on hold for who knows how long, or would you like to have a direct line you can call for immediate help? That's where a good teammate comes in. Learn more about bringing Provident Payments onto your team at providentpayments.com. They really are one of the fastest growing payment consultants in America. That website again, providentpayments.com.
Proudly presented by Provident Payments, this is Hometown Heroes. Celebrating everyday Americans who answer the call of duty.
Welcome back to Hometown Heroes, and a little different feel today with 92-year-old Jacob Volkov of Fresno, California, author of Trekking Through Trials. We have that book linked for you at hometownheroesradio.com and on the Hometown Heroes Facebook page. The 10th of 10 children in a family that had been exiled from Russia because of their religious beliefs, Jacob was born in Turkmenistan and raised in Persia. You heard him say that World War II didn't really affect life in their small Russian village in what is now Iran, and that he didn't necessarily even believe all the news about that global conflict that would occasionally filter its way to their isolated community. But after the end of the war, you're starting to hear more things and you're hearing about America as the city on a hill, so to speak, that you wanted to come to. What else happened there to bring you to the States?
Again, because the news was spread. Now we could go to America. We as children played war. I chose to be American as a boy. Nobody knew anything about it, but I made sure that America was on the top. And I wanted to be American even while growing up in Iran. So in 1950, I was the only one who spoke English, because some American people wanted to go to Russia, it's peacetime, as missionaries to preach the gospel. And they approached the Soviet ambassador. And the Soviet ambassador, surprisingly, was very gentle. He told them, okay, let's look about it practically. Russia was involved by the communists. They almost came to Moscow. And suddenly they were so far away from their own country to get their food or whatever it is from their country to them all the way to Russia was impractical. And besides, that year, the winter came very early and very severely. So they couldn't get everything they needed, the ammunition, the food, the whatever human beings needed. And it came in late or none at all. So they decided, to hell with Russia, we're going home. And a lot of them died on the way. And what they did, they burned cities, they burned land, any kind of crops that they destroyed. In fact, the Germans brought railroad wagons and loaded with Ukrainian soil because it was so rich and brought it to Germany. Imagine Ukrainian soil in Germany because their crops would grow better than their own German crops.
But so these missionaries were how you ended up learning English? Because they ended up where you were, or what happened there?
See, we had missions in different countries. So one family went to one country to another, and one country decided to remain in Iran and built a boarding academy, meaning high school. And they were looking for students, and that Russian-speaking missionary found about me that I am excellent in languages, spread the news that in Tehran, the capital of Iran, there is a boy in the village who will be very good in the village. So the principal of the new boarding academy came on an American missionary we call a What do you call the car that is used like carrying wounded people?
Ambulance?
Yeah, like on their, and they were selling. The Americans were not going to take all their possessions. It's just like bringing, burning fire into the forest. So they told the Persians, we have a lot of wealth here. Why don't you, we'll sell it to you for a very short and cheap price just to get rid of it. So the Persian told the Americans, we don't want American rags. And the Americans said, you want rags? They took their brand new American uniform and put some soldiers with scissors and just cut in delicate places and just threw them away. And I remember my brother, and they were just selling them to any people. And my brother the oldest one, went to the city, and he came across Americans, brand new uniform, mended. He bought some. And so I did see the mended American uniform. So I went to the missionary school. I was one of the very first students to be there. And I'm not going to talk about it because in great detail I described it in my book, and I don't want to talk about it.
And how did you end up as a guy who spoke Russian and Farsi but not as much English? How did you end up in the U.S. Army and acquiring your citizenship as a result?
I learned enough English in Iran to be accepted into the military language. So I was trained to be a medic, to be sent to
Korea,
yes. And so I was to go. And someone found out that I had three languages, and they said, "Hey, we hire people with the education that the person we trained to be on the battlefield. And then we hire them. And here is, we own it, our free person. Let's teach him. Let's take him away from Korea and send him to the intelligence school."
I believe you spent close to 3 years in the Army, is that right?
2 years. And because I did not take vacation, because I didn't know what to do, where to go, I just continued working.
And you were trained as a medic, and you said you were hoping to be a medic in Korea. Then they had you take the test for intelligence, but you didn't pass English, so they sent you to Japan?
No, they sent me to Japan to begin with. I didn't want to go to Korea at all. They just sent me from America on a ship to Japan.
And what did you do there?
I worked in the hospital. It was a military American hospital on Japanese good hospitals. And shortly after I immigrated, returned home to America, the Japanese took possession of those hospitals, American hospital, on Japanese good hospitals. And shortly after I immigrated, returned home to America, the Japanese took possession of those hospitals.
What kind of things did you do? And who were the people that you were treating?
American soldiers sent from the battlefield, or those who were sick. So I had one who dived from a boat into shallow water, and he injured his head and his neck. Well, he was one of my patients. And I didn't do anything simple, just like a nurse.
And I'm just imagining that you saw soldiers in all kinds of situations. Guys, you said someone who dove in and was injured that way. You saw guys with wounds that they suffered in battle?
I guess it was psychological. There were some students who had that problem. They had no injuries of any kind. They were just upset, so they sent them to the hospital to get well. So I worked with them, joked with them, made them happy.
These are guys battling different forms of what we would generalize now as post-traumatic stress disorder, the battle fatigue?
I think so, yes.
How hard was that to see? Because these are
young men like you who've had to see things that people should never see? Was it hard to see them in that kind of state?
You know, my grandmother was a natural healer, uneducated in Russia. She hardly stayed home. She could identify all kinds of diseases and treated all of them. I think I got some of her gifts, inherited something.
It's time for our final break, but we'll explore more of Jacob Volkov's time as an Army medic when we come back. Also, his honor flight to Washington, D.C., and why that made this immigrant even more proud to be an American. Head over to hometownheroesradio.com or the Hometown Heroes Facebook page for photos of Mr. Volkov and a link to his book, Trekking Through Trials, and we'll be right back after this. Do you ever have those moments where you realize you've been settling for less than the best for far too long? Sometimes we just accept the status quo without looking around for better ways to do things. And I've got to tell you, when it comes to your money, I believe I found a better way with EECU. Take a look at myeecu.org and you'll see why. EECU is not a bank. It's a nonprofit credit union that's all about taking care of you, the member. That's one of the reasons EECU just keeps growing and growing. Close to 300,000 members now in 10 different California counties. Over 30,000 ATMs, free mobile banking. And what I really love is how EECU always goes above and beyond to serve the community. In 2013, the leadership and generosity of EECU helped establish Central Valley Honor Flight. Over 1,500 veterans now have gotten to see their memorials in Washington, D.C. for free. And that's just one example of the community involvement EECU takes oh so seriously. Pick up the phone and become a member today. 1-800-538-3328. That's 800-538-3328.
Honoring veterans from sea to shining sea, you're listening to Hometown Heroes with Paul Leffler, brought to you by this local station and its sponsors, and presented everywhere, on the air and online, by Provident Payments, one of the fastest-growing payment consultants in America. Connect today at providentpayments.com.
Welcome back to Hometown Heroes and a chance to get a very unique perspective today from 92-year-old Jacob Volkov of Fresno, California. We've heard about the religious persecution that forced his family out of Russia to Turkmenistan and then to Persia. He came to America just in time to get drafted into the Army during the Korean War.
What are the memories that you have from your time in the Army? Maybe the best memories, the worst memories? What are some of the things that stand out from your 2 years in the Army?
I felt like one of the Americans. But once in a while, I would translate jokes and sometimes mispronounce a word. For example, let me tell you, one of my jobs for American sergeants in Iran yet told me she would take sheets, pillowcases, and the sergeant's military uniform to take to the laundry. And she said, please write down how many coats, how many sheets, how many whatever. And I wrote down, I gave her my list, and she looked, she said, Jacob, you did a pretty good job. However, we didn't spell sheets like that. She said, because the way you spelled it is a bad word. And she told me what it is. And you know what? Instead of being embarrassed, I was embarrassed, yes, but I felt proud. I said, here I learned first American swear word that my students in the classroom will never hear.
Is there anything else about your time in the military that stands out or that was important to you?
There were some people who were not Americans. Before I started working in the hospital, I worked in the post office. In the office, because I could typewrite. in the office for a dentist. And I did all the, prepared all the papers to be sent to Washington, D.C. And when everything ready, once a month, someone took those papers, put them in envelopes, and take them to the post office. Well, I was. It was not where I worked. It was just a place where GIs worked. It was not the post office.
Right.
So one person wouldn't let me take the papers that I typed to take to the post office because I was Russian. I was hurt. I thought of Russia, of America, as a heaven on earth. I came here, and my wife especially. If anyone asks her, do you know Russian or something, she says, I am an American. She would never admit that she's Russian. I admit Russian, that I am Russian. Because I was hired in high school to teach Russian. I was hired to teach in beginning college.
Yeah.
So I don't hide it. But I am an American.
Yeah, and you have some recent perspective on all of this, too. You got to go to Washington, D.C., your son went with you, Central Valley Honor Flight. What did that experience mean to you? What kind of perspective did that give you?
I was like a foreigner. To me, everything was new. And something, it was foreign, but so beautiful. And I was made a hero among all other people. I was treated like a hero. And I loved every bit of it.
When you visited a place like the National World War II Memorial that honors over 400,000 Americans who died in World War II, or the Korean War Memorial, the war you served in, where there now are 36,000 American names that have been added to it, or the Vietnam Memorial, where there are 58,000 names, what kinds of thoughts or emotions did you experience at those memorials?
I wanted to cry. I said, look at all these young people. Life is with them. It's like a flower that's just opened. And they're all dead. And we are showing all of these buildings, tools, bragging that about their guns. What are those guns for? Killing people. So being a religious person, that entered my mind. And I enjoyed it all. The work, the way that they described. And yet, I wanted to cry.
And then you came home from there. And I know you had plenty of mail to open on the plane. And then you had a few people waiting for you, wearing red, white, and blue, and cheering, and the band playing, and the sailors standing at attention. What did that mean to you?
I felt like a real hero. And there was a school at, what's the place where they lay the
reed?
Arlington. Yeah. There was a school there. And about 5 chosen students were involved, and those children were probably asked to write letters to the heroes there who came there, the honored students in red jackets. And they gave them to somebody, and they put them aboard, and just about approaching Fresno, pilot said, "Now listen carefully. You have mail aboard the plane, so sit quietly. It will be brought to you." I thought, who will write to me? But meanwhile, our twin boys and the oldest daughter called all my relatives and explained my participating in honor flight to Washington, D.C., and they all wrote congratulatory letters. That was an honor from those students who called me a dear veteran. Was so pleased. I cherish the baddie. I'm going to save them. I am saving them. To see those children thinking of me as an American hero. I became a thoroughly American. I became thoroughly American long before this flight, but even more so now. I am truly American.
Well, and that's what I wanted to ask you about, because you have a perspective that many of us don't. Those of us who were born in this country have never known anything but freedom, can take it for granted. But you were born just because of your religion. You weren't welcome to maintain Russian citizenship. In a way, you were a man without a country for a good portion of your life.
We were called uncitizens in Russian and Farsi. Means we didn't belong to any country.
So you were the outcast, you were the alien, but you just told me how proud you are to be an American. And when you came home on this honor flight, you saw age 0 to 100, every ethnicity, religion, tax bracket, political persuasion, all of them agreeing that you deserve gratitude and they're cheering for you and they're waving that flag, the red, white, and blue. So when you see that flag now, what does it represent to you?
It's different. It touches my heart. Now, one thing, one letter that really, really touched me, it was written by a Hmong soldier, junior in high school. And he wrote what I did to help his parents who were mistreated by their own country. And America brought them to America. And what a pleasure it was. And I am saving that America for their parents. To me, that was touching.
So you shared with me the parallel between your experience and the privilege you had by serving in the Army of helping preserve America so other immigrants like that young Hmong gentleman was able to share with you. What does America mean to you? What does it represent in your mind?
It means I belong here. I am accepted here, that I am a true child of America.
Bachelor's and master's degrees in English and Russian. He would teach both languages in high school and college, and I have no doubt that his story has taught you something today. If you want to see his photo with Gorbachev or shots from the honor flight, or of course his book, Trekking Through Trials, visit hometownheroesradio.com or just check out Hometown Heroes Radio on Facebook. Thanks so much for listening to Hometown Heroes today. I'm Paul Leffler, reminding you again that freedom is not free.
To let Paul know about a veteran in your life, visit hometownheroesradio.com and click on Suggest a Veteran. Today's program has been brought to you by Provident Payments. Give your business the edge only their personalized service can deliver at providentpayments.com.
If you spent much time listening to Hometown Heroes, you've probably heard veterans from all over America talking about the mission of the Honor Flight Network, taking World War II veterans free of charge to see their memorial in Washington, D.C.
I wanted to see it. I've always wanted to see it since they built it. And to see all those guys there that did survive, and then they get emotional. Pretty soon you get emotional too.
I tell you, that honor flight, I just can't believe what a wonderful deal it is.
Everywhere people came up to us, military guys and civilians, and wanted to shake our hands and thank us for all we did. I kept saying there were 16 million of us, you know, and I only did a little piece. But it was just an emotional high.
When it comes to our men and women in uniform, all gave some, and some gave all. A reality underscored as veterans visit the World War II, Korea, and Vietnam memorials and Arlington National Cemetery.
All those white crosses, they're going to your heart. You just know that there's good guys there, but they had to die. For what? So you could live.
And while they are still living, Honor Flight gives the rest of us a chance to express our gratitude. Won't you encourage the World War II veterans in your life to put in applications for this all-expenses-paid journey to their memorial?
It does something for each of us who have been veterans who go back, whether we're a guardian or whether we're honored as a guest on the flight. It completes our life, really. It gives us a sense of fulfillment that we weren't able to have before, I think.
If you live near me in Central California, find Central Valley Honor Flight at cvhonorflight.org. Wherever you're listening, there's a hub in your area, and you can find it on the national website, honorflight.org. Sign up a veteran, volunteer to help, or donate to this important and time-sensitive mission. It's amazing what it means to these members of our greatest generation.
I'm telling you, they make you feel so good and so wonderful. Let me tell you, I can't preach enough about this. You listening?
The manner in which we were treated and greeted and acted toward was just awesome. It made me believe that the people of the United States are just wonderful.
Time is of the essence. Team up with Honor Flight today and help give our veterans one more tour with honor.